Hello and welcome to Talking Opinions. I am your host, Anthony Livingston Hall. Let's face it, we're all getting stressed out watching Serena blow chance after chance to win a record-setting 24th Grand Slam. And don't get me wrong, she's still playing really well. For an old woman. But no, seriously. Most players are lucky to ever make it to one Grand Slam final. This is why it's so remarkable that Serena has not only won 23 finals, but made it to four more since winning her 23rd, nearly 4 years ago. The problem is that watching her these days is more unnerving than thrilling, which clearly explains why women's tennis must be thanking its lucky stars, because Naomi is not only thrilling fans on the court the way Serena did when she was winning her first tournaments, she's also charming fans off the court, the way Serena did with her very compelling life story. Granted, it might be too soon to presume first name only recognition. So, for the uninitiated, I'm referring to Naomi Osaka, the winner of this month's COVID-defying US Open Grand Slam. But first, some props for Serena. For nearly two decades, she reigned atop the world of women's tennis, even when injuries, and then a pregnancy, caused her to lose top ranking. Nobody ever doubted that a recovered Serena would still be the best player in the world. There have been many pretenders to her throne, but they've all come and gone. Most notable among them, of course, was Maria Sharapova. But then along came Naomi. I first hailed her as Serena's heir apparent after she won her first Grand Slam at this very tournament 2 years ago. Many readers thought I was mad to think she could ever emulate Serena by dominating the game for the next two decades. I could hardly blame them. After all, she could easily have been just the latest one-slam wonder who would soon fade away. You know, like Francesca Schiavone, Anna Ivanovic, and Sloane Stephens. But nothing vindicates my coronation quite like Naomi being the only player to win three of the last seven Grand Slam tournaments. By the same token, though, nothing indicates Serena's fading glory quite like her failure to win any of those seven. Ironically, Serena is winning more commercial endorsements than tennis tournaments these days, because it's easy to forget how she was complaining at the beginning of her career about pretty, no-talent white girls getting all of those endorsements. Here's looking at you, Anna Kournikova. Sidebar. This is a case where that Virginia Slims motto about the advancement of white women actually pertains to a black one. And so I say to Serena, you've come a long way, baby. In fact, thanks to Serena, Naomi is getting those commercial endorsements at the beginning of her career that Serena complained about not getting at the beginning of hers. And the proof is in the pudding, or in the bank account, as is more the case, because a recent report in Forbes magazine revealed not only that Naomi is getting more commercial endorsements than any other player on the tour, but that she's earning more money than any female athlete in the world. But I digress. I should clarify that I'm not saying that Naomi will surpass Serena's haul of 23 career Grand Slams. I just think it's noteworthy that Serena's failure to surpass Margaret Court's record-setting 24 has not precluded anyone from hailing her as the GOAT, that is, the Ali-inspired boast of being the greatest of all time. So Naomi's failure to surpass Serena's record should not preclude anyone from hailing her as the new GOAT. The problem is that injuries might, because, as was the case early in Serena's career, injuries are causing Naomi to withdraw from Grand Slam tournaments. Case in point is next week's French Open, so it remains to be seen if she can recover and resume her dominance the way Serena always did. For the record, Naomi rallied from a one-set deficit to defeat Victoria Azarenka in three 16-6-3-6-3 for that US Open Championship. It was a thrilling demonstration that she has not only the skill, but the will of a champion. But I'm especially impressed by the way Naomi seems determined to defy the white sensibilities that prevail in her sport. After all, with the notable exception of founder Billie Jean King, I'm sure the white officers of the WTA would really like it if Naomi would shut up about racial justice and just play ball. So, kudos to her for being in the vanguard of professional athletes championing the BLM cause. Never mind the irony of ironies, because COVID protocols forced Naomi to keep her mouth shut on this, the biggest of all international stages, in women's tennis. Mind you, Naomi was probably fine with that, because she describes her voice as the most awkward in tennis. And if you've ever heard her timid, nasal, barely audible voice, you probably agree. As it happened, though, this only provided Naomi another opportunity to display her dynamic will, because she found what might have been an even more poignant way to champion this cause. She had the name of a martyred victim of police brutality emblazoned on the mask she wore for each of her 7 matches. This forced TV commentators and viewers around the world to do as BLM protesters demand. Say their names. Breonna Taylor, Elijah McClain, Ahmaud Arbery, Trayvon Martin, George Floyd, Philando Castile, Tamir Rice. No doubt this is why Naomi is the only tennis player, male or female, to make Time magazine's list of the world's 100 most influential people of 2020. But, given all that, I shall be very disappointed if she fails to join the chorus of those calling out Tennis Australia. This because it is refusing to remove Margaret Court's name from one of the main stadiums before next year's Australian Open. The shame, of course, is that Court is the record holder of the 24 Grand Slams that Serena is so tantalizingly close to tying. But Court's dogmatic homophobia, to say nothing of her pining for apartheid South Africa, poses an untenable association that an influential player like Naomi should no longer abide. Speaking of which, Serena has shown a little activism throughout her career too. The problem is that it usually stemmed from her going ghetto out on center court. Perhaps you recall that infamous incident when she threatened to stuff a tennis ball down the effing throat of a lineswoman who simply dared to make a costly call against Serena. Or another, when she accused the umpire of calling her a thief after he penalized her because her coach violated the rules by sending her signals during a match. Serena framed those and other incidents as a black woman just standing up for her rights. I should share at this point that nobody is a bigger fan than I. Well, with the possible exception of my old college roommate. But even I, a proud black man, thought Serena was dead wrong in each case. It would have been one thing, for example, if the linesperson she snapped at were a big white man. But this was a petrified little Asian woman who looked up at Serena as if she were a huge meteorite about to land on the poor woman's head. But that incident with the umpire brings me back to Naomi, because it occurred when it was clearly dawning on Serena that Naomi was about to deny her last best chance to win her record-tying 24th Grand Slam. And speaking of awkward, there is no denying how awkward it was for everyone in the stadium that day, and even for those of us watching at home. The wonder is that it did not rattle Naomi. She was, after all, trying to win her very first Grand Slam. Yet she held not only her nerve, but her serve to win. Now let's get personal. Like many readers who inquired, you too might be wondering how Naomi identifies racially. Her father is Haitian Leonard Francois. Her mother, Japanese Tamaki Osaka. This is why she identifies as black and Asian, which I suppose is one shade of race consciousness above Tiger Woods identifying as Cablanesian. Remember that? Mind you, with all due respect to Naomi and Tiger, it's instructive to know that the most famous biracial person in the world never identifies as black and Caucasian. The reason, of course, is that Barack Obama knows that from the days of slavery, whites have always treated biracial Americans as black. It has never mattered if that black person looked as white can be. More to the point, biracial blacks had to toil as slaves and suffer the indignities of Jim Crow, right alongside their darker brothers and sisters. And, thanks to this Trump presidency, some whites are doing their damnedest to recapture those halcyon days when just one drop of black blood meant you were as black can be. This brings me to another probing question which Naomi's racial identity poses, namely, why is her last name Osaka and not Francois? She has lived in the United States since she was 3 years old, and she holds dual U.S.-Japanese citizenship. What's more, reports are that her father has been as much a guiding force and paternal presence in her life as Serena's was in hers. But he maintains that Naomi's last name reflects nothing more than common sense. A. Because in homogeneous Japan, a biracial child stands a much better chance in life if she at least has a Japanese name. And B, in competitive America, a tennis player stands a much better chance of securing funding for training if she competes under the flag of a less competitive country, like Japan. This, even though, like many foreign athletes, she trains exclusively in America. So, game, set, match, the Osakas. That said, I think I'll end this episode with an epilogue on Serena. As I bemoaned at the beginning of this talk, Serena has blown four chances in Grand Slam finals since taking time off to have her baby. This is why it had to be especially devastating that despite COVID preventing some top players from even participating, she could not even make it back to the finals at this US Open. And I suspect her devastation was only compounded by the fact that it was another mother, Victoria Azarenka, who eliminated her in the semis. This unfolding twilight moved me to share the following with the college roommate I mentioned earlier, and I quote, "I feared it would be thus. I just hope she has the good sense to retire before she ends up like Venus. She should have emulated Steffi and retired after losing that second chance at number 24. The writing was clearly on the wall. But if, as you suggest, she announces 2021 as her final year on the tour, I'll bet good money that, with the lack of pressure, she finally wins another Grand Slam, or two. Hey, hope springs eternal." End quote. And so it does. That's it. If you liked this talk, please subscribe. If you'd like to contact me, I invite you to do so at the email listed or through the contact feature on my blog, www.ipjn.com. Thank you for listening, and until the next Talking Opinions, goodbye.